Hello out there in internet land, and welcome once again to the D&E Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Merles, and with me is my co-host, Jeremy Crawford.
Hi, everyone.
So, this episode, we're going to talk a bit about Gen Con. We actually just got back. It's the Thursday after the show. We flew home on Monday. And so, right off the top, Jeremy, what was your impressions of the show?
It was another fun show. This one, I think, went by faster than the previous Gen Cons I went to. I mean, the whole thing was a blur, but a good blur. I got to DM a lot of games, participate in some seminars, even got to do a little bit of shopping and play games by other companies. So overall, it was a good time.
Yeah, we were showing off the Redbox, and it also was the premiere of Dark Sun. So it was nice to see people lining up to buy Dark Sun. We're pretty excited about it. And with the Redbox, we had the chance to kind of talk a bit about it to different bloggers and anyone who just randomly asked us. And Jeremy, from what I understand, you ran the Redbox Adventure.
Yes, I ran it several times. And as you said, not only had a chance to talk about what's in the Redbox, which for those of you who don't know, is our new D&D starter set, but I also got a chance to talk about some of the things in the Essentials line, particularly in Heroes of the Fallen Lands, which is the Essentials player book that comes out in September. And overall, a great time. I also ran an introductory Dark Sun adventure. And also, those who were at the convention know this, that up in the Sagamore Ballroom, which is the vast chamber where we have many D&D games going on throughout the convention, we were also previewing the Castle Ravenloft board game, which, Mike, you and I had a chance to play on Saturday night, and it's a great time.
Yeah, it was pretty fun seeing people get excited about the board game. It wasn't for sale at Gen Con. It's not on sale yet. So that was pretty exciting. It's a cooperative dungeon crawl, dungeon exploration board game. It was also fun talking about the Red Box. You know, one of the things I think people got excited about was, since it's the intro set, we really looked at how people create their first D&D character. And we, at the end, decided, hey, what's the best way to play D&D is just sit down and play it. So there's a solo adventure in there that you play, and as you play through it, you create your character.
Right, and that's something we couldn't really preview at Gen Con since we were playing with a group of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's actually one of my favorite things in the Red Box is that solo adventure where the choices in that adventure that you make help determine like your character class.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And other key aspects of your character.
And that's kind of a theme you'll see in the Red Box, in the Castle Ravenloft board game, and in the upcoming Gamma World role-playing game, where the emphasis is on getting you playing as quickly as possible. From when you tear the shrink wrap off that box and start playing should be 10 minutes or less. You know, that's something we really want to try to get people hooked on the game very quickly, as opposed to having to read a lot of rules, spend a lot of time making a character. I mean, those are fine. Those are fine parts of D&D. That's what gives the game its depth. But part of the intro experience is getting people playing as quickly as possible.
Right. In contrast, in Heroes of the Fallen Lands, and then also in Heroes of the Forgotten Kingdoms, the two Players Essentials books, those have more of a traditional D&D character creation experience.
Yeah.
Where you customize your character and have an array of options available to you. Although the character creation process in those two books is a bit more step-by-step than what we present in the Player's Handbook.
Yeah, essentially there's a section before each character class that you can just skip past if you already know how to make a character, but it just guides you through making choosing feats, choosing powers, what race, what stats you should go for. So it's really just there, you know, to help if beginning players or if you've never played a wizard before and want to make one up, it just kind of shows you what the most important choices are.
So Mike, on Saturday morning, we previewed some of the products that we have coming up in the next year or so. Do you have a couple that you're particularly excited about?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Heroes of Shadow. It's a 6x9 softcover book. Brings forth the Shadow Power Source, which you've already seen in the Assassin. Now, we're going to be premiering a new Assassin build based on some of the principles we've kind of established in the Player's Essentials books. That'll be coming out, I believe, in October. So the Heroes of Shadow will not have the Assassin in it. That's going to remain a DDI exclusive. But one of the things I'm excited about is it's a book that's aimed at all characters. There's options no matter what character class you're playing. There's something interesting there for you. Not necessarily like, you know, there's not necessarily like new fighter abilities, but the feats are really aimed to be very broad. And we're really aiming to make the books going forward just enjoyable to read. You know, it's just something where the powers have more descriptive text that gives them more of their history or insight to the world of D&D. You know, for example, in the race chapter, there's two new races, but there's also spreads talking about each of the common races, like dwarf or elf, and how they view shadow magic, where it fits in culturally. So really make these books more interesting just to read as books. And the equipment book, Mordenkainen's Emporium, has a similar approach to it, where we try to give a little history of the magic items. We're doing more than just giving you magic items. We're giving you other types of gear that you can purchase. So those would be pretty exciting to see once they come out in the reaction to those. A little more like the Monster Manual 3 approach we took.
And Heroes of Shadow has a companion product, the Shadowfell box set, which not only gives information for DMs about the Shadowfell, but also contains the, I'm blanking on what we're calling the deck now.
I think it's the Fear deck.
Is it now the Fear deck or the Despair deck?
It's one of those two. I haven't worked directly on it. I'm just actually just looking at, starting to look now at the final draft. But yeah, and that's something where if you're adventuring in the Shadowfell, to give your game a bit of a horror feel, there's a deck of cards. You can deal cards out to the players to reflect the emotional stress, the strain on their sanity as they encounter these horrific creatures, to give your game more of a horror feel, to really make the Shadowfell feel like a really distinct place compared to the typical D&D adventure.
Well, speaking of shadow and horror, the product that we announced that I'm most excited about is the Ravenloft role-playing game.
Yep.
Because I've always been a big fan of Ravenloft, and we announced that we are working on a standalone Ravenloft role-playing game that can also be used as a campaign setting for Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah. And that comes up next October. But anything more than that, we can't really talk about yet.
Right.
So obviously at Gen Con, new games. Were there any new games that caught your eye?
Let's see. I played several games while I was there. I got to try out Green Ronin's DC Adventures. That was fun. I was a fan of Mutants and Masterminds in the past, and so enjoyed DC Adventures as well. We tried out the Death Angel card game, which is that Space Hulk card game.
You see Space Marines fighting aliens and on a Derek ship. I had a lot of fun. We messed up the rules, but I still enjoyed it.
Well, I think we were playing it a little too late at night.
Yeah, one in the morning on a Friday or whatever, / Saturday. But I still enjoyed it. It's a cooperative game.
One of the games I had the most fun playing was Castle Ravenloft, frankly.
I'm glad to hear. I hope you're not just trying to get in my good graces
here. No, well, but again,
as our co-host.
I'm a Ravenloft fan, and it was just, it's a good co-op game.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun running it. There was I had a group of friends of mine who wanted to play it, so I was able to Shanghai a copy and get them into it. And there was one moment where they're about to win the scenario. In the game, there's different adventures you can play through. Those adventures have special rules attached to them, and it basically serves as the adventure or the scenario you're going to play through. They were about to win it. All they had to do was get one more turn, and they're going to win. And before they took that turn, they drew an event card, and Strahd appeared to the mist and fireballed and killed all of them.
Yes.
So that was in that game. And I felt like I wasn't playing. I was just kind of helping them learn the rules and stuff. But I have to admit, I kind of cackled when I saw that happen as the game's, one of the game's designers.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much in that game, the two event cards that are the most terrifying to draw are either Strahd or Petrina Velikovna.
Everyone's favorite. Is she a banshee?
She's a banshee.
Yep.
Yep. I love Petrina.
I picked up a book called The Bones, which is about dice, different essays collected about dice from different game designers and writers, and a book they released, I actually want to say it came out 2 years ago, but it may have been last year, called Things We Think About Games, which is very interesting. If you're a budding game designer, if you're just interested in games, they're both really interesting just to check out and kind of have general thoughts on game designs, what makes games work. Very eye-opening reads, so I recommend both of those. I'm happy I have both of them in my collection now.
Reading material I picked up there was the Cthulhu 101 book by, I think, is it Atomic Overmind?
Yep, Overmind Press, written by Ken Height.
Yeah, and the book was an NE recipient at the convention, and it was a fun read on the plane home.
There was the NE Awards this year, which we both attended. We took home 2 awards, which was very proud of the staff. Peter Lee for his work on D&D Minis, and everyone who worked on PH3. The Emmys were a good time. It was good to see people honored for their hard work. Paizo won a lot of awards.
Yes.
Which was good to see those guys work hard. And then, which I think, what else? Oh, Shadowrun won a couple awards. Mm-hmm. Catalyst Game Labs. And a new game called Eclipse Phase, an RPG that came out. I believe it came out shortly after Gen Con last year. It's a transhuman sort of science fiction game. It's kind of a surprise winner, and I don't think anyone's really counting on it to win awards.
And they racked up several.
So yeah, it's always good to see the kind of the role playing industry kind of come together and just celebrate what's happened the past year. Yeah. So the thanks to the Emmys folks for putting on the awards ceremony. We had a good time, and looking forward to going next year.
Anything you want to say about the Neverwinter campaign setting that we announced?
I think when you look at how we're designing classes and essentials, when you look at what we do with the Blade Singer, I think it'll all start to make even more sense how this approach can be very, can have a lot of payoff in design and in making classes interesting.
And some of our listeners might not know that Neverwinter is an area in the Forgotten Realms. So this is sort of a campaign setting within a campaign setting.
Yeah, it's basically taking, you know, we're trying to get the best of both worlds in the sense of giving you a good excuse to kick off a new campaign, but also giving Realms fans more lore to look in. So instead of saying, like, look, if you want to explore the Realms, you have to buy this book, then buy this book, then buy this book, it's giving people more entry points into the Realms, you know? So we'll definitely be looking at how it does and see maybe that's an approach we can take with the Realms and other campaign settings, you know? It's almost like if you're an Eberron fan, as if we did a campaign setting that is set in Stormreach and just focuses on, you know, the giant ruins and the drow that live in the jungle and everything like that. You know, it just has a little more of a focus to it. Let's just take one area and really give you more lore information. So like I said, hopefully if you're just looking for a new campaign or if you're a fan of the setting, it gives you a lot of information to really chew on.
Yeah. Well, going to Gen Con makes me look forward to PAX.
Yeah, that's our next convention.
Yeah, which is in less than a month.
Yep, and we're going to be there. We're going to be there podcasting.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. PAX is always fun. See some what's going on in video games. And, yeah, and that's in Seattle, so we don't have to try just to get in my car and drive about a half hour. There.
Right.
Which is nice.
I in fact, will be able to walk to the convention. So if any of you listening are in Seattle Labor Day weekend and you're going to PAX, Mike and I will be there on Saturday. Look for us. We love meeting players of D&D, talking about the game, hearing what you think about it.
We're big D&D nerds.
Yes.
No surprise.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And each year at Gen Con, one of my favorite things about the convention is just simply talking to players of our game and also observing people playing it in the Sagamore Ballroom to see what kind of tokens do people make at home to run their games. You know, what kind of cool homemade DM screens
do they have? Yeah.
This year I saw a guy who had cut up illustrations from some of our books to create sort of 2D/3D models of some of our monsters. It was almost like this, you know, like home craft project.
That's
but
cool.
It was really impressive.
Yeah. See, I'm like that, but I paint my minis and stuff. I don't like taking them out of my house. So I get very nervous about transporting them around.
Now, speaking of miniatures, you and I typically come home from Gen Con with bags full of miniatures. Did you come home with any this year?
Not surprisingly, actually, this year I didn't. I'm going to do a lot of stuff through mail order this year.
Oh, okay.
I took a look at a lot of minis. There's one of the things I really liked at the Reaper booth. They have a game called Warlord. It's their mini skirmish game. And they're coming out with it's the same rules, but it's based on the Savage North. It's all about Arctic and frost giants and dwarves. And they have a pretty cool dark elf faction that's sort of based in the North that has this almost kind of like savage barbaric look to it. I thought it was really cool. So I'm going to be put those on my Christmas list. And their frost giant miniatures look fantastic.
Oh, yeah. They look great.
So they have a really good job. If you like Wayne Reynolds, you're like, because they had him do a lot of the art for it. Mm-hmm. They commissioned artwork from him, and then they based the minis on it. So that was really cool. So I got my little list. I go to their website and I make my shopping list of stuff I want to get. So yeah, that looked pretty cool. There's another miniatures game called Malifaux I checked out that looked kind of neat. It's just like a Victorian steampunk/fantasy game that looked pretty interesting. It has it's diceless. It uses cards for all the resolution of actions. So that looked pretty nifty. Part of it too is my budget is hurting a little bit between home improvement projects and all that, and car repairs and all that.
You need to get your priorities straight and spend some money on games.
Tell that to my wife. So, yeah, that's... it was more shopping list building.
But
I bought a few games and bought a few books, but I had to kind of watch my budget this year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for Gen Con. Another year, another good time. Looking forward to going back.
And again, if any of you are in the Seattle area, Labor Day weekend, come out and see us at PAX.
Hi, I'm Chris Perkins, and this is Shelley Mazenoble, Player-in-Chief.
Hi, Chris Perkins.
How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. It's quite an honor to be here with you.
So what brings us together on this particular occasion?
Well, you are the DM to the Stars. That's the new title I gave you.
Oh, okay.
Or would you prefer Celebrity Dungeon Master?
I think that might fit better on my business cards.
Okay. Chris Perkins, Celebrity Dungeon Master. So I have always heard tales of your DMing skills. They're legendary around here. I'm sure you know that. But I've never actually seen you in action. I've only heard the stories. So at Gen Con this year, I had the privilege of watching a game DM'd by you, Celebrity Dungeon Master. However, it wasn't just any old game. It was a game that included Ed Greenwood, R.A. Salvatore, Larry Elmore, and three lucky audience members.
Yes, that was awesome. We basically had them waiting out in line while we were setting up, and then when we let them in, we handed them the little booklet which had the encounter we were going to run in it.
Which you wrote.
Which I wrote.
Okay.
And then when they were all settled and seated and I got through the introductions about why we were doing this game to promote the Red Box, I told them to flip to page 3 of their books where you guys had put a little stamp on 3 of the books. So those who had the big thumbs up stamp were lucky enough to sit in with Bob and with Ed and with Larry and play. I was very nice.
Really? Is that how... Well, first, let me just say that watching you DM was like, I don't even, like watching my favorite TV show or something, because you were on fire. And at one point, Laura even leaned over to me and she was like, man, Chris really brought it. You didn't feel any kind of pressure having to DM a game for these guys?
No, hell no.
Because you are a celebrity dungeon master.
Well, it's not that, but when I am the DM, I'm in my zone.
That's it.
It's like a race car driver. When they're on the track, they're in their zone, and it's like the happiest, most calm place on earth for them, even if they're going 200 miles an hour.
So no matter who's at your table, you feel confident and in control.
Absolutely, because I know I'm going to be DMing, and I'm going to be having a great time.
And clearly they all did. And even as an audience member, we were all... Everyone was getting into it. Everybody was loving it.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we were playing, I mean, before we started playing, I talked to Larry because he hadn't played Dungeons & Dragons in years. Like, not since the 80s. But he did remember his D&D character, who was a dwarf fighter. And I had him playing a dwarf fighter by coincidence. And so he was very comfortable settling in. He actually used his old character's name.
I was going to ask if his character's name was...
Elrod the Red.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
same
very
character.
Nice.
And, he was intimidated at first because he hadn't played in a while and he didn't know how much the system had changed.
Yeah.
But once he got into it, and he said this afterward, it was just like a fond memory resurfacing. And by the end, he wanted to keep on going. So that was really good.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. And that says a lot about you, obviously, as a dungeon
master. One of the things he said was, I got to get a game group together. And I thought, yes.
Oh, nice. All right. Well, Larry Elmore is looking for players. If anyone out there wants to start a game with him. So I think about you DMing this game that we're filming and there's an audience there watching and there are three superstars at your table. I mean, how did you prepare for this? Like, even, you know, leading up to it, you obviously wrote an adventure.
Yeah, everything was sort of laid out before me. I was asked to write an adventure that dovetailed into the adventure in the Red Box. So I just did a direct continuation, sort of an assumption that, hey, you've just finished the Red Box adventure. What's next? Well, how about some bad guys attacking you as you're leaving the dungeon with all your loot? And so I wrote that encounter. I wanted to be simple and straightforward just so they could get a feel for combat. I left most of the role-playing stuff, with the exception of a few little choice quotes I wanted to make sure that the bad guys would say. Most of that stuff was pretty much just left to the players. And part of that was driven by the fact that before the game actually happened, when I was talking to each of the players individually on the floor, I spoke to Bob and he said, now look, I've been speaking to Larry and we're going to try to kill Ed.
Oh my God.
And then I'd go talk to Larry and Larry would say, I was talking to Ed and we're going to kill Bob. And then I went to Ed. And so I figured my job was going to be extra easy. I would sit down, I'd start the game, everybody would roll initiative, and then the players would all kill each other.
Yeah.
Game over.
Yeah.
And I tried to incite that a little bit, as you may recall.
Yeah.
Giving them the idea that maybe one of them wasn't on the up and up, but they didn't kill each other.
No, I think they ended up having too much
fun. And the whole encounter played out, and they got to meet some cool NPCs.
Speaking of, loved the voices.
Oh, right. Yes.
Clyde?
So there was Clyde, who was the were-rat henchman, to the main villain, who is a tiefling necromancer named Ninga Murdergrave.
Murdergrave, that is quite the name.
It is. It is.
I just want you to, every now and again, when we're in a meeting or something, just say something like Ninga.
Linda, murder grave.
Yes.
Necromancer extraordinaire.
And she said, oh, for Pete's sake.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
That's my favorite. I keep quoting her. Oh, you'll probably hear a very annoying laugh on that video because that was me. I was happened to be sitting right next to the camera. Sorry. So also about the characters that everybody played.
Yes.
You pre-generated characters for them?
What I did is I created four characters using the red box rules.
Okay.
And they were the basic four, the dwarf fighter, the human cleric, the elf wizard, and the halfling rogue. And then I created two other characters, or actually Cal Moore, one of our editors, created two other characters that were done using Player's Handbook, a dragonborn paladin and a tiefling warlock.
Okay.
To illustrate the point that Essentials and the red box characters play alongside other existing characters perfectly well. They're all balanced.
And you thought about who you were playing for as you were creating
Absolutely.
These characters.
I had a feeling that because the red box fighter is the sort of simplest class to play, mm-hmm. that would end up going to Larry. And I figured, based on a little bit of typecasting on my part, that Bob would pick up the halfling rogue and Ed would pick up the elf wizard, and I was right.
And you were absolutely right.
Yes.
They gravitated towards them.
Yeah, and then the other players, the guests, the from the audience, basically picked up the other three characters. They had big smiles on their faces.
Oh, the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
They did. I just remember turning around when you had asked everyone to stand up and just to see who it was, and it was,
yes.
I've never seen an expression like that.
Exactly.
One of them was...
And there was a great deal of audience participation, too. At one point, there were a bunch of people basically shouting rules or suggestions to the players for what to do.
Yes.
Or calling me on, you know, some bad rule.
Oh, yeah. But I guess that's one of the hazards of DMing in front of an audience.
It's true. But you work with that, right?
Yeah.
Like, I took one of the ladies out of the audience and had her co-DM with me.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
That was super cool.
That was cool. It took a lot of pressure off.
Yeah. You can just sit back and
exactly.
let her do all
now
the
it's all her
work.
Fault.
Okay, so one last question.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'll be able to answer this right now because you'll probably want to put a lot of thought into this. But if you could DM for any five people, fictional, living, dead, whatever, whoever they are, five people that you could DM for, who would they be?
Five people?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
How about four?
Coming up with a list
Three?
Of... coming up with one would be tricky enough. Oh, my God. Let's see. I would want to run a game for H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay.
Barack Obama.
Oh, he was in my group, too.
Oprah Winfrey.
She was in mine, too!
Really?
This is crazy.
That is crazy. Shelley Mazenoble.
Mine, too!
And your crazy cat, Zelda.
No. Oh, my God, I love it.
No, the fifth person would probably be Gary Gygax.
Okay. Well, that was a lot of those people in my group, too, but I'm also adding Joan
Wouldn't
Rivers.
Wouldn't that be an awesome game? Oh, Joan Rivers would be there just for sheer camp.
I think she would have a ball.
Yeah. Kathy Griffin would be another interesting choice.
That was my other one.
Yeah.
What? This is crazy. I had no idea. Okay. Well, that was all my questions I had. I just wanted to know a little bit of backstory about this awesome game. So thank you very much, Celebrity Dungeon Master Chris Perkins. This is Shelley Mazenoble, Player-in-Chief. Until next time.